Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit in survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
Before John begins his interview today, I'd like to remind you that KBOO has started their membership drive. You can support programs like ours, Disability Justice, by going to kboo.fm/give so that you can become a monthly sustaining member.
With me today is Glenna Hayes, Advocacy and Outreach Coordinator for UCP. Good morning, Glenna.
Good morning, John.
Today we will be discussing sexual supports. Do you mind defining sexual supports for us?
Yeah, well, sexual supports can look like a lot of different things because not one need fits everybody. So when we talk about sexual supports, we're talking about, you know, education, gender identity, support around exploring gender identity, support with exploring sexual orientation, as well as exploring romance, marriage, and sex. And we'd like to even talk about it a little deeper in the sense of actually being more hands-on and bringing sex work into sexual supports.
Okay. Thank you for that definition. Hey, Glenna, we have talked about this in the past, but we have talked about how sexual orientation, attraction, and gender identity has been labeled as behaviors within the IDD community. Would you mind expanding on that?
Definitely. So a lot of the time what ends up happening, because it's a multi-layered issue. A lot of the providers are not paid or trained enough to actually have those conversations. And it can sometimes blur the lines between professionalism with providers, because a lot of the time, again, they don't have that training or knowledge on how to support somebody with gender identity, orientation, or just general sexual or romantic attraction. So what happens is a lot of the time it becomes an unmet need. And I'm a firm believer that a behavior stems from an unmet need. And because of that and how the system and the funding for our people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, also known as IDDD, how that works with our funding is they're flagged to get some type of behavioral specialist support, which is a whole nother issue with long wait list, not enough providers also in that field, because they also support mental health supports through that funding. So it's labeled normally a behavior because some type of risky behavior has started or inappropriate behavior has started. So they call in a behavioral health specialist to kind of help explore that, which can create a lot of shame. It can also stall the process of somebody exploring their gender identity or sexual orientation, which means they're living in an experience that is not true to their full self, which can be very damaging over time. And then attraction and desire. So many people have that need in the world in general. And I think a lot of people who are neurotypical and able-bodied forget is they get to go out there freely and express that. They're freely able to explore that. But within the community of ID and DD services and supports, a lot of the time they have to rely on a provider to help them safely navigate that. And that support is not there.
And most providers have their own taboos that they're trying to overcome when it comes to sex. So, you know, that's not necessarily always the way to go through is through a caregiver, because as you've stated, they're not trained for any of that in their first place. And then they have their own taboos and their own personal issues around that whole subject. So, you know, there's a whole lot of that as well.
Yeah, definitely. The whole, we can't talk about that, that's not what I'm able to support you with, comes up a lot. You know, there's a lot of stigmas in general that sex and relationships have, but add that layer of we're supposed to be providing some type of hands-on or direct support, and you have a disability, it kind of just comes as like multi-stacked sandwich that's just sitting on the table and nothing's getting done with it.
Yeah, often that's a route in which there definitely needs to be some specialization in. What are the problems with not meeting this basic human need?
Ooh, that is a large Christmas present of a question, because there's so many unmet needs and harm that's caused. So first off, individuals with disabilities are way more likely to be sexually exploited, trafficked, abused, forced into sexual experiences that they are not fully consenting to. And especially if you have an intersectional identity, the statistics for that go even higher. Then you have, like, one example is a lot. I've met a lot of individuals who, females and some men, who turn the age of like 18 and 19. And they actually, there is a group of older men who wait for that age to come up and are more likely to exploit them because of their disability, and kind of promise them a future and healthy relationship. And they end up being really harmed and sexually exploited and abused for a few years until they reach a certain age. And then that individual basically dumps them and is no longer in their life because they're just cycling through.
And when you say abuse, and forgive me for bringing this up, but when you say abuse, this is something like, because I've heard this before in this community, this is something where like a dude marries a lady and kind of uses and abuses them, kind of really messes them up, because I met so many of them, being that I am in the community, and I've seen them take decades to get back to a point of even being able to step out the front door.
Yeah. Prolonged exposure to trauma can actually create CPTSD, which is a lot, it's a very heavy mental health diagnosis, and can cause an array of different issues. And it takes a long time to recover from that. You know, because normally they're financially abused, they're isolated from their family, they're trafficked, and they don't really have any other individuals to like rely on except for the person who's abusing them. And then a lot of the time they end up being houseless, because once that person has reached a certain age or is no longer interested, they're just kind of left on the street with nothing. And that's one specific example of abuse.
I was wondering, how many of those individuals wind up committing suicide after something like this?
I'm sure it's very high. When you look into statistics for people who are survivors of sexual abuse and harm, the rates of returning to their baseline and not having severe mental health is very slim. But like I said, if you add that intersectional identity on top of it with a disability or intellectual or developmental disability, and then also trying to navigate a whole entire new world when you have an intellectual or developmental disability, and you're not being listened to or have the proper supports to help you navigate it, I'm pretty sure that number's high when you consider all those factors for our community.
All of this around the fact that people still consider sex taboo,
mm-hmm.
rather than educating people. I mean, not just the intellectual disabled community, but just educating people in general around the whole area of sex, marriage, healthy relationships, sexual orientation, gender, and all that other stuff. I mean, it is just like really huge, simply because people keep on saying, ooh, no, sex, no, we can't talk about that. It's all evil, it's bad. And yet nobody would be here if there was no sex.
Yep. Well, and then creating it, not by avoiding the conversation and not providing education, it almost creates this like underground community that's just living in shame and is trying to figure out their desires and needs. And they're doing it in a way that maybe not fully safe, not only for them to engage in, but they also might be causing the harm themselves and not know it. That's another part of it, is with this unmet need and lack of education and actual hands-on support to help an individual navigate these things safely, they could also be out there causing harm and not know it. And then if you have two individuals engaging in a relationship that they're not sure what's healthy and what's abusive, they're creating either an abusive relationship simultaneously, or one person can develop very harmful abuser tendencies and continue that for the rest of their life. without ever being held accountable or checked to break those habits and behavior. So you can have somebody who's like 18 and their first experience is them hurting somebody else or causing harm, and they'll go on and live until their 40s to deal with it and could be causing harm that whole entire time. But because no one's talking about it or the behavior or the actions that they're engaging in, no one's going to know. And I'm a firm believer, you know, with people who cause harm, it's we need to hold them accountable and help them break the cycle and heal so that they don't continue to cause the harm to other people. There's so many layers of education that they can be pulling from that we may not even realize. Like there's also a lot of, there's been a few individuals that I've met who like really are super into the princess rescuing, right? Like they're waiting for their knight in shining armor to come save them. And they're replicating relationships that they've watched through movies, not through an actual realistic perception. They could be replicating their parents' relationship that could have been toxic and harmful. They could be replicating a caregiver's relationship that's abusive, and they don't know that it's abusive or harmful because they're not even able to talk about it, or they're not able to kind of even hold a conversation of like, hey, I really want a relationship. This is what I think a relationship is. Or, hey, I want to have sex. And if you, especially because porn is so easily accessible, it's not filtered. People could be trying to replicate pornography, which is not reality, and maybe causing some harm or having unrealistic expectations also of what sex should be. A lot of the time when we have conversations around sex, everyone's definition of sex is different, right? But sex can mean so many different things for so many different people, especially when we're talking about different bodies and different needs. So even our definition of sex as a society and a community isn't straightly defined. So how can we have a cookie cutter conversation around sex and have all these boundaries and limitations when we all have a different idea of what sex is and what should be, and not even being able to talk about it? It's like everyone's living in their own weird video game realm of like trying to navigate stuff, but no one has the key.
That seems to be the way it is. I mean, for not just the intellectually disabled community, but the disabled community, and just sometimes I would say just even the neurotypical community, you know, it just seems like this country was founded by purists. The only problem is they didn't seem to understand that without sex, you don't actually have a society because nobody's reproducing. And if nobody's reproducing, then there is no society.
Mm-hmm. And that's also a good point, right? Like, what if someone's version of sex is like only having babies? What if that, like, they don't necessarily just want to engage in sex, but they want to have sex to have a baby? Like, there's just so many avenues of having even the conversation around sex that we need to start having. And then when we talk about, you know, our community being exploited and abused, there's also the lack of education. They can go on to replicate harm. And people with disabilities, people don't realize this, is labels stick with disabilities for the rest of their lives. People with disabilities have a file that anyone who's providing supports or case management supports, it goes in your file. And a lot of people in life, even if they've harmed somebody, are able to kind of recover and continue on with their life. But people with disabilities don't get that privilege of escaping.
People with disabilities, everything about them has to be exposed. They don't really get to hold anything privately, or you know, they don't get to hold on to any of that, because if they do, then they don't get any help that they need.
Mm-hmm. And especially when we're talking about negative labels, it's just really frustrating to think about, like, if I harmed somebody else and there was no legal, or there's no one watching me, there's no legal repercussions, I get to just go to a different community and go about my life. But if it happens one time with somebody with a disability, rather than there being a conversation around healing and not replicating the harm, they get that label. And then a lot of the time it's stuck in the judicial system because there's always somebody watching their every single move. And once that label's on you, you're not given the support needed to heal from that and move on. You're labeled, you're stuck in the judicial system. And a lot of the time, because of people with ID and DD and prisons being unable to meet their needs, they get put into a high security group home where that's where they're going to live out the rest of their life and potentially even develop more behaviors, because I guarantee most people are not explaining to them in a way that they're able to fully comprehend, because the system's ableist, that really what is going on and even what they did wrong. And a lot of the time they're just locked away without given a lot of support and understanding of like what went wrong and the opportunity to recover from that and heal.
Also, perhaps maybe the opportunity to make amends to the people that they may have wronged.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, when I talk about accountability and transformative justice, those avenues are meant for both people to heal so that our communities can continue to grow and support and heal from the harm that has been done. And most people, I think, are just so quick to judge, especially not when we're talking about ID and DD. Some people just have a different perspective or a different way of processing, and they're not even fully aware of what is the implications or the impact, just because they need a little support in understanding it.
So the problems that we have addressed are the lack of education causing harm to our community. So now can we discuss how physical disabilities are affected?
People with physical disabilities are also impacted by this. Not only do they not have a provider or support to even have the conversation, they also don't have an avenue to explore what they desire. They don't have always the avenues to explore their bodies the same way that we get to, but they don't have the opportunity
when you're paralyzed completely.
Yes. Or even just limited mobility, you know, and then what are they going to do? Watch porn for their satisfaction, but like not get the physical sensation. And also just watching porn as a way of figuring out what you like is not the avenue to always go. So, you know, and how can, you know, using toys is an option, but if you have limited mobility, you can't always use toys. And then, you know, not being able to physically express a desire and need, especially a healthy one as like self and an exploration, that can spiral into mental health, physical problems, like physical health problems, and unhealthy coping mechanisms and skills just to kind of meet some type of need in a way that you can control and manage. A lot of people forget that with any disability, our society takes away a lot of that control and agency and self, and not having an avenue for that, especially around a physical sensation or desire, can really have a heavier impact than most people realize.
Oh yeah, I realize it quite well.
I think everyone is, I really hope that everyone has been taking this isolation and this pandemic as a way to really kind of have some of the lived experiences that people with disabilities have their whole entire life. Most people go months without being touched, even friendly or romantic. Most people, you know, don't have the same interactions when you have a disability due to societal stigma and shame. So hopefully people can reflect on, you know, if you had a quarantine or were isolating for months on end, imagine living your whole entire life that way. And you can't even talk to the people who are around you to even figure out how to meet that need.
Yeah, I hear that. So what are the advocacy efforts in this area? What's being done to try and bring this up to legislation and administration and all that stuff?
So there is a House bill on the Oregon floor right now, the House bill 3088, which would decriminalize sex and prostitution. And I'm a firm believer in that. I think that not only do we have a community of people with disabilities who have an unmet need, we also have a community who is doing the work, who is willing to provide that, but is shamed and stigmatized, and it's illegal. And so it's a lot, it's very unsafe. So both communities have, one's providing sex and sex work, one is needing sex and sex work and just an avenue of support, but both are shamed and both are engaging in a lot of unsafe behavior because it's not supported. It's not talked about enough. So that would be an avenue to bridge and uplift and empower both communities and provide a safe avenue for things that they're already doing, they're already exploring and already wanting. So I really think decriminalizing sex work is going to be an option. Also just mentioning to the federal government and other congressmen how this could impact both communities. Statewide is great, but I would love to see it go on a national level where we're even talking about it. And then you and I are continuing to push with senators and representatives to support that bill. And yes. Hopefully we'll...
Yes. We had talked to Rob Noson. He has yet to respond to us, but we had also talked to Representative Solomon about possibly getting out on the House and giving... What was an informational session, perhaps? So cross fingers, audience, and let's hope they actually respond to us soon.
Both yeah, definitely.
Solomon.
Yeah. And, you know, and if you're a constituent in a area, I really encourage you to talk to your representative about this and explore, you know, what it's like for people with disabilities to even talk or have about sex. Like, this is a conversation that very many individuals have on the sidelines. And I think engaging in these conversations with your family, with your friends, and making sex in general a less taboo, shameful subject is going to help all communities being able to express and figure this out together. And support your sex workers. I mean, they're out there already doing the work. And instead of it being shameful and criminalized, if we brought it out of that area, it would be a lot safer. It would be a lot safer for everybody engaging in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it would. So I'd like to say thank you to Glenna for coming into the studio and bringing up this rather taboo subject, but it needs to be brought up. And hopefully me and Glenna will be on again about our advocacy areas, our advocacy progressions in this area.
Yeah, happy to be back.
Yeah, we give us a few months to make some progress in it, and then we'll have Glenna back into the studio, and you know, we'll go over our successes and what we still need to do. Yeah, thanks a lot for really helping us out with advocating for this badly needed service.
Yeah, I mean, if we can uplift and empower both communities of people with disabilities and sex work and provide safety and just a thing that able-bodied neurotypical people take advantage of without realizing how much of a privilege it is. I think just raising education around it too is, I'm just glad that we're at least having these conversations and happy to be back anytime to talk about sex.
Well, I'm just happy about taking people with intellectual disabilities and disabilities and turning them back into human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of non-humans.
Definitely.
As the government seems to want to recognize us.
And sometimes just our society in general.
Yeah, and sometimes just our society in general. Thanks once again. I really appreciate this. We will be talking to you hopefully after the long session, which is what, July when it ends?
Yep. We got like 180 days, I believe it is.
All right. So look for us again in August. All right. Thank you, Glenna. Dear KBOO listeners, I would first like to say thank you to KBOO for giving a voice to those of us who do not have a voice. And so far as I know, the only one who has done this for our community. Please support them as they support us.
You can donate by going to kboo.fm/give. You can also click donate in mobile app or text KBOO to 44-321.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email. disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.